Radio Prague News.
Some 120,000 people turned out for the latest protest against the Czech Prime Minister over his alleged abuse of EU funds. The Czech President has summoned Russia's ambassador to explain a draft law misrepresenting the Soviet-led invasion of 1968, and three men have been sentenced for killing tigers and trading in animal parts destined for the black market in Asia. Another in a series of protests against Prime Minister Andrej Babiš took place in Prague on Tuesday evening over his alleged abuse of EU funds and, in this regard, his appointment of a new justice minister seen as overly loyal to him. The protest organizers, a group called A Million Moments for Democracy, said some 120,000 people took part in the rally. That would make it the biggest public protest since the anti-communist demonstrations in the year 1989. President Miloš Zeman has summoned Russia's ambassador to Prague Castle to explain draft legislation now in the Duma, which states Soviet troops took part in the 1968 invasion of Czechoslovakia to, quote, suppress an attempted coup. Earlier this week, the Czech Foreign Ministry criticized the draft law related to veterans for misrepresenting the Soviet-led invasion, which crushed the Prague Spring reforms. It said the draft law is in stark contrast to international law and to a 1993 treaty between Prague and Moscow. Czech Foreign Minister Tomáš Petříček arrived in Paris on Wednesday for a meeting with his French counterpart and the country's State Secretary for European Affairs. He is expected to present the priorities of the one-year Czech presidency of the Visegrad Group, which begins in July. They will also discuss ongoing military operations in Mali involving soldiers from their respective countries. A Czech court has convicted three men, including a taxidermist and an animal parks owner, of killing critically endangered tigers and illegally trading in animal parts. Prosecutors say they had arranged to have tigers killed and their parts processed for sale on the black market to Asian buyers. The court sentenced taxidermist Miloš Hrozinek to 3 years in prison and animal parks owner Ludvík Berošek, a member of a famous circus family, to a two-year suspended sentence and a fine. A Vietnamese businessman also got a two-year prison sentence. The 74th edition of the Prague Spring International Music Festival wrapped up on Tuesday evening with a performance by the Toulouse Capital National Orchestra under the baton of its chief conductor, Russian maestro Tugan Sokhiju. The Czech Republic's largest classical musical festival got underway on May the 12th, offering around 50 concerts. In sports news, Czech tennis player Markéta Vondroušová has advanced to her first career Grand Slam semi-final following a 7-6, 7-5 victory at the French Open. It took the 19-year-old Czech 2 hours to defeat Croatia's Petra Martic and book a spot in her first major semi-final. She next faces Britain's Johanna Konta for a place in the Roland Garros final. Tomáš Dvořák, a former decathlon world champion and world record holder, meanwhile plans to step down as head coach of the Czech Athletics Federation after this season. Now 47, he took over the post in the year 2009. In a press release, Dvořák said he was looking forward to less stress in his life, but could imagine staying on as a consultant to the new head coach, at least for a while. And finally, the weather. Rain is in the forecast for Thursday throughout the country, with thunderstorms likely in the Vysočina region. Average daily highs should range between 25 to 28 degrees Celsius. I'm Brian Kennedy, and that's the news for now.
You are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. I'm Daniela Lazarová. Coming up in today's program, over 100,000 people demonstrate against the Czech Prime Minister as the battle rages on for his political future. The Institute for the Study of Totalitarian Regimes is helping teachers to make history classes more interesting for students. And later on, we'll hear from Filip Jiroš of the Czech think tank Synopsis on the dark side of Chinese investment. So please stay with us. Thank you. News outlets around the world reported on Tuesday's demonstration in Prague calling for the resignation of Prime Minister Andrej Babiš, which organisers say had the largest turnout since the Velvet Revolution. Among the tens of thousands of protesters were many representing the regions where the Prime Minister's party has its main power base. Tom McEncrow reports.
He is a thief was just one of the many chants echoing through a packed Wenceslas Square on Tuesday evening, in reference to a leaked EU preliminary audit which indicated that the current Czech Prime Minister's former company, now in trust funds, may have drawn EU funds in violation of the law. Organisers say that attendance lay at around 120,000 people and it was difficult to move at all in large parts of the square. Many of the protesters proudly displayed banners bearing the names of the towns and villages they had arrived from, disproving claims by some supporters of the Prime Minister that these demonstrations are only attended by so-called urban liberals from Prague. As the demonstration was getting underway, the main organiser of it, Mikuláš Mináš, told Czech Radio that the turnout for those coming outside of Prague was truly massive.
Packed trains are arriving from large regional cities, but also from villages like Sušice have been sending full buses full of people. It's incredible.
Furthermore, an in-depth picture of those attending the protests was conducted by Czech Radio's online news service, Iroslas. It revealed a wide generational diversity among attendees. Reporters gathered 150 interviews with random protesters across the whole square, asking who they were and why they were there. Interviewees ranged from teenagers to 80-year-olds, with the overwhelming majority saying they had come because of the Prime Minister. Many pensioners, who are traditionally seen as the voter base for Andrej Babiš's Ano party, said that they would not be bought by increases to their pensions and were thinking about the future of their grandchildren. At the time of the protest, a heated debate in Parliament was raging over the results of the EU audit. The Prime Minister launched a fierce attack against the European Commission, accusing Brussels bureaucrats, as he said, of telling the country how to interpret its laws.
The audit is very doubtful, and I consider it as an attack on the Czech Republic and its interests, as a destabilization of the Czech Republic.
Meanwhile, the opposition managed to pass a call that in the case of financial damage to the state, the culprit will be held responsible, and the burden would not rest with taxpayers. A further opposition call calling for the seizure of funding payouts by the Czech state to Agrofert affiliates did not pass. Minister for Regional Development of the ANO party, Klára Dostálová, told Czech television the reason for this was because the finance ministry had already seized funding payouts since August 2018. However, she was unable to offer precise details on which projects.
Tom McEncrow there, and of course we'll be following up that story in the coming days and weeks. Moving on now, the Czech Republic's Institute for the Study of Totalitarian Regimes has launched a new project to help teachers in primary and secondary schools make history classes more engaging. Called Obrazy války, or Images of War, it focuses on the period of the Second World War and provides teachers with alternative study materials based on photographs and film clips. Ruth Franková has the details.
Czech teachers are often criticized for teaching history in an old-fashioned way, still based mainly on memorizing facts. Historian Čeněk Pícha, one of the authors of the project Images of War, says that while traditional textbooks are still an important source of information, they frequently fail to engage modern-day children.
We decided to this project because we are thinking that communication in our society is based on the exchange of images. It's obvious from the popularity of platforms like Instagram, and it's for teachers to prepare some materials for classroom to make the classroom or history education more accessible maybe for children, because this communication with images is something what children and pupils know from everyday life. So we are trying to speak with their language also.
The website Images of War is divided into two parts. The first one, called Events, focuses on key moments from the period between the years 1938 and 1945. The authors deliberately chose events with a long-standing effect on the country's history, such as the establishment of the Protectorate Bohemia and Moravia, or the assassination of Reinhard Heydrich, the Nazi governor of the Protectorate of Bohemia and Moravia. The second, more experimental part of the project is called Images and offers sets of photos and film clips that enable students to see the historical events from the Second World War from a different perspective. Mr. Bicha says that with direct witnesses of the Second World War gradually dying out, historians have been searching for alternative methods how to speak about the event and how to mediate the experience to school children.
We have records of witnesses. It's really important to work with records, but I think that also film clips and sources from popular culture are important for history education about the Second World War. There is a lot of discussions, a lot of emotions about the Second World War, so it's important to prepare children and students for the discussions and orient them in this topic. So I think it's still really important experience of the Czech society that's important still today.
Apart from teaching students about the key events of their country's history, the project Images of War also focuses on teaching them how to interpret historical texts and images and how to recognize propaganda. Images of War is just one of a number of educational projects prepared by the Institute for the Study of Totalitarian Regimes in recent years. 2 years ago, for instance, historians launched a website called Socialism Realized, focusing on English-speaking audiences with no experience of what it is like to live in a communist regime.
Ruth Frankova reporting there, and a reminder that you're with Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, where it's now time for our main feature. Ahead of the 30th anniversary of China's crackdown on peaceful pro-democracy demonstrators in Tiananmen Square, Radio Prague spoke to Philip Jerosz, coordinator at the China Watching think tank Synopsis, about the politics behind some of the more controversial aspects of business dealings between the two countries. Harsh critics of China's sweeping Belt and Road Initiative, to which the Czech Republic has signed on, and the main Chinese investment vehicle here, CEFC, he further argues that allowing Huawei to roll out the 5G network would be a disaster. Brian Kennedy has more.
Philip Jerosz of Synopsis finds it troubling, to put it mildly, the degree to which the Czech president and other political and business elites have opened the door to business with China, an authoritarian state experimenting with capitalism where transparency remains a rare commodity. I began by asking him what he thought of China's Belt and Road Initiative, introduced in September 2013. Which aims to build a vast network of highways, railways, ports, and pipelines linking Asia via the Middle East to Europe. In April, there was yet another Belt and Road Summit, which some listeners might know better as the New Silk Road Project, as it was once called. Estimates vary on the amount of money spent, but generally it's a $1 trillion project, the biggest infrastructure project since the Marshall Plan, which Czechoslovakia was famously prevented from joining. What makes this troublesome or worrisome?
Lack of transparency. This is what is the problem with the regime in China in general. You don't really know who actually is often behind these projects. Quite often it is actually state-owned companies that are, for example, doing the Belt and Road projects. Again, clear links to the communist regime itself, which then quite often leads to, if nothing else, a suspicion that this initiative is all about promotion and advancement of Chinese interests themselves in the various kind of countries. This is part of the reason why it's been creating so much backlash all over the world. We can talk about debt trap diplomacy. That's definitely possibly part of it. But at the same time, there's been a lot of issues from environmental to security, and especially to whether those projects are actually necessary. In a lot of the countries we've seen, the projects are not necessary and are basically promoted by the political elite to sort of split the benefits. As we've seen in Malaysia, you have actually a pretty hefty amount of evidence to show that this was basically a very corrupt project in Malaysia, where the previous corrupt government was actually splitting the money with the Chinese SOE that was running one of the projects. And we've seen corruption going on. We've seen Chinese push for lack of transparency at these projects. And also, obviously, the problem that it's actually Chinese companies that build the projects, that quite often ship in their own workers, ship in their own material. And it's, again, not investment quite often, but more likely it's actually loans. So that's another problem. So the economic benefits are often, let's say, not clear. The local governments often refuse to make any proper independent assessment of whether this is feasible, whether this is actually necessary. But mainly in Africa, Central Asia, Southeast Asia, the governments just push for it and then sell it to their voters as, look, we have brought in Chinese investment, we're doing something for the people. But as I said, as we've seen, quite often this is not to the benefit of the people as the whole, as the mass, but to a couple of wealthy and powerful individuals in the country and to the benefit of the Chinese regime and the companies involved.
Right. A bridge or a road is something very tangible that the average person can see and as evidence that the government is doing something, but it might end up being the kind of famous bridge to nowhere or road to nowhere that no one actually uses. You mentioned the debt trap, and there's concern that the Chinese government is actually counting on default, and this is a way to seize land or ports, and in some cases even to establish military bases.
This is something that has been debated in the academic circles for quite a while. We don't really know whether this is the ultimate goal to get these countries into debt, but it's definitely, if it wasn't the goal, if this is not strategic, it's actually working out pretty good in the sense, like, both you silence these countries that are involved in critique. For example, we can see this clearly with what's going on in Xinjiang with the persecution of the local ethnic, of the local Turkic ethnicities that are being persecuted, and at the same time, the Muslim world being completely silent because of Chinese money. At the same time, we have seen the first establishment of Chinese military bases overseas within the last couple of years as part of the Belt and Road Initiative. For example, in Djibouti, then you have the military outpost or military base in Tajikistan, which has so far been completely denied by the local government, but we actually have the satellite views and pictures to prove it. And if you, for example, link it to what's going on in South China Sea, this is definitely linked to it. This is a way to utilize money that the Chinese regime can't really use domestically because it's foreign reserves, and they basically take this money, invest in all kinds of strange projects that often involve a lot of the political elite. So they use this for elite capture.
Elite capture is a form of corruption whereby public resources are biased for the benefit of powerful individuals in detriment to the welfare of the larger population. In the opinion of Philip Yerosh, elite capture is at the heart of China's deals made abroad. In some cases, it serves private interests rather than China's national interest, as evidenced by some high-profile corruption cases.
The deals should be checked. You know, any deal you make with the Chinese state should be checked by, ideally, an independent committee of lawyers, of people who are actually statesmen, to make sure that this is a good deal. This is something that benefits the people and not only the people running it.
If we could turn specifically to the Czech case.
Yeah.
The Czech president, Miloš Zeman, is well known around the world as being especially close to China, to Russia.
Mm-hmm.
Several years ago, when he welcomed his Chinese counterpart to Prague Castle, there was a 21-gun salute, first time in half a century. And yet, ahead of the summit in April, even President Zeman was complaining a bit that the fruits of this investing this political capital, essentially, had not come in terms of actual investment. How do you see it?
Well, I would say this is pretty much what has been going on in what we sometimes ourselves here call like the third world or the developing world. The same practices in the sense that the Chinese reach out to a specific group that has links to political elites and people and big businesses around them. This, I think, is the only explanation to what's going on in the Czech Republic as well, because you see clear evidence and clear coinciding times between when the company PPF, which is the by far the largest financial group that even though registered in the Netherlands, is actually of Czech origin. It is a product of the post-communist privatization. So this is a very big player, a player that has been known to sort of hedging in politics, basically buying up political influence among the parties. Again, this is hard to prove, but we've seen clear links, especially personal links, between people who are working for example, the presidential office and who are actually working for PPF, the company itself. And basically, around the year, let's say 2014, PPF started a sort of a pilot, or it was actually earlier than that, but they already had a pilot project for non-banking sort of commercial loans going on called Home Credit in China. And what they got, and this is basically already proven to be a fact, what they got from the Chinese side was you need to get political backing back in your country as long as you want to actually get a nationwide license to do this. And basically the political backing you need is because of how the Chinese market works. There is no rule of law, the regulators often behave unpredictably, and so for even for the Chinese side to actually be sure that you are not going to do anything wrong or bad, potentially harmful, they need to have the government of your sort of home country involved. So they basically started influencing a lot of the political elites here, started helping China to do elite capture tactic that we've talked about. And then they turned the sort of human rights lost cause foreign policy towards China, where we promoted, for example, the interests of Tibet or Taiwan, which is why the Czech Republic, for example, has really good ties with Taiwan. And they turned it around, started talking about economic diplomacy. But from what we've seen, and this has been going on for what, like 5 years? The only beneficiary of this turn was actually PPF itself, because its income in China has risen tremendously.
The Czech Republic, in effect, signed on to the Belt and Road Initiative more than 4 years ago. The private conglomerate CEFC emerged as the flagship for Chinese investments. President Zeman even named its chairman as his honorary advisor. But allegations of corruption and demonstrable mismanagement led CEFC to implode. The company's former chairman is believed to be in prison in China, though rumors circulate of an untimely death following his arrest last year. In any case, the Czech assets of the scandal-ridden firm have since been taken over by another Chinese state-owned enterprise called CITIC. These assets include the football club Slavia Prague, the airline travel service, the Lobkowitz brewery, and various hotels and office buildings. Is there a positive side to this investment? Are the Chinese filling a role that no one else is?
No. I will elaborate, don't worry. So CEFC has been basically proven to be sort of like a pyramid scheme. But instead of your usual pyramid scheme or Ponzi scheme where you have small sort of investors, you had state-owned enterprises sort of within the system that CEFC put up. Because of how the system works in China, where basically state-owned enterprises get a lot of money, but they don't know what to do with them, so they usually give it to, they outsource it, basically. And there's been several companies like CEFC who took that money and went abroad, invested. Usually it was actually acquisitions, not really investment, which is what happened here as well. But what's kind of curious about the Czech case is that it seems, and there's a lot of evidence to that effect, that it was actually not even Chinese money that was behind these acquisitions, but it was actually, let's say, Slovak or Czechoslovak money that they borrowed from this bank called JNT. which then actually took over CFC's assets for a short period. I think it was like 2 weeks of time last year. And so CFC only did acquisitions. They bought a football club. They bought luxury and debt assets, in the sense like those assets were not, unless a lot of management was put behind them, there was no profit to be made. So it was clearly political. We can obviously speculate what was the actual reasoning and what was the purpose of this sort of vanguard of Chinese investments, let's say, in the Czech Republic. Some would say it was clearly just the advancement of Chinese interests and elite capture tactics in the Czech Republic.
Filip Jiroš of the think tank Synopsis went on to say that while elite capture is not new, it has clearly intensified under President Xi's Belt and Road Initiative. In his view, so too has economic espionage, as documented by the Czech Counterintelligence Agency, BIS. He also argues that for the Czech Republic to allow the technology company Huawei to do the 5G rollout here would be an enormous mistake. Huawei has ties and de facto obligations to cooperate with the Chinese intelligence services, as well as the army, he notes.
It would be, I would say, stupid of us to disregard this in such an important matter as is the security of our infrastructure. Of, you know, internet is now becoming more and more important piece of infrastructure than ever before. So we should definitely be wary of that. And if anything else, really not allow Chinese tech or any other technological company that has clear ties to some sort of authoritarian regime, to some sort of military that has no transparency whatsoever into what we call is the critical infrastructure.
Filip Jiroš, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Feature by Brian Kennedy has brought us to the end of today's program from Prague. You'll find us at radio.cz. Should you like to contact us, then our email address is english@radio.cz. We'll be glad to hear from you, as always. And of course, remember, you can follow Radio Prague on Facebook and Twitter as well. This is Danielle Zarová saying thanks for joining us today and take care.